Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Bleach Boys, episode 32, The Holy Newborn. Ooh, what could it mean? Now, we knew going into this one, I talked about it, I read the manga. We did a little bit of streaming ahead of time to kind of talk about what we were expecting. I hope everybody went into this episode knowing it was going to be more dialogue. I feel like if you didn't know that, you'd be very disappointed because it was all dialogue, but it was a good episode. It was not as good as the previous episode. I think we could all agree on that, but it was a good, solid episode, and this is the last episode. If it follows the manga all the way through and through, this is the last episode that's going to be very dialogue heavy. After this, I think for the rest of the series, we go straight gas.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what comes after this part. I remember.
Yeah. So it's going to be crazy after this going forward. There's going to be no breaks. It's going to be the take your brake pedal, throw it out the window for the rest of the Bleach series. It's going to be full on tilt. What did you guys think of the episode? Did you guys enjoy it? Did you like it better than the previous one?
I liked the previous one better, but I did enjoy this one quite thoroughly.
Pythies?
It wasn't as good as the last episode, but I will say this. Despite me pausing like every 5 seconds to write down notes, when we got to the theme, I was like, oh, it's over already? I was getting into it.
it did go by real quick.
I saw a really funny comment that I guess the director for this episode is somebody that doesn't normally direct the episodes. And someone was like, this fucking director was spamming OSTs every 5 seconds. Like, oh, that's totally right. that's totally right. When I was watching it, I was jamming the whole episode. Yeah. I was like, this is great. Because, you can't go wrong with Bleach music. Love Bleach music. But he was throwing a new soundtrack on every time something's happened. I was like, this is great. But so yeah, it is true. He was spamming OSTs nonstop. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It was enjoyable.
Bleach OST. How awful.
Yeah, right. What a punishment. Ugh, I can't believe he did that to us. All right, let's kick it off with the episode. We kick off right back on Udyu's disgusting ass flesh stage that we keep looking at. And Urahara, to my surprise, I don't know if you guys know how this works, just makes the orbs appear in everybody's hands. It's magic.
It was kind of cool.
We're just going to scroll past that. There's no explanation needed. He could just make orbs appear. Pretty cool. Really begs the question why they wouldn't make an orb appear in Aizen's lap, but we'll come back to that
he's
later.
He's out of the radius.
Yeah.
He's just out of the radius.
Did you guys notice
that
Aizen moved and he's in a different spot again? Yeah. What? Who keeps picking him up? Who keeps picking up Aizen?
X.
Yeah, he's got wheels on it. Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. He's in a different spot again. It's really, this fucking Aizen guy is really starting to piss me off.
There's just some guy that puts him on a cart and just drags him around as needed for the scene.
Can you imagine, though, you're trying to play tag and this dude is like, you're like, oh, easy, I'm going to touch him.
And another thing that I thought was very interesting about the scene is that they are building up Reishi's spiritual pressure to make this gate. Mayuri is not involved. He's in the lab doing his own thing. He doesn't want to give Reishi. He's not interested. Doesn't want to be out there with the team. So is all of Squad 12. Squad 12 is in there with him as well. They're working on some sort of research, the computers. They're doing something. They're tippy-tapping on the keys.
They're trying to find Yachiru.
But they're not helping.
Yeah.
So I feel like Mayuri, maybe not the strongest spiritual pressure, but I mean, it would be worth it to have him on there, I would assume. So as they are doing this is when we see the black orbs appear and begin to suck up the Wandenreich cityscape that was previously fused with all of Saberite, which something happened in, I think, Thousand Blood War Core 1, when they fused, or was it the second invasion? In one of the early seasons, they fused the Wandenreich with the classic Saberite, and that's where we get everything that we've known thus far. But now all those pieces are being sucked up. We get the one-for-one manga reaction from Shinji here. He says, don't our enemies have any limits as what they can do? Because he's freaking out that all this stuff. Like, it's crazy that they're watching this. And Urahara is staring at the gate as it kind of starts to, I guess, not so much flicker, but lessen in brightness. And he's like,
it's not as powerful. It's
And he's dying. Like, man, we need to hurry. And then we go straight to the opening scene. So we go straight to the opening credits. Pretty straightforward opening. Pretty straightforward setup. Everybody tries to power it up. Man, this gate is like the Project Curse from hell. They just cannot complete just this gate. They've just been trying for so long. Every time they get close, something happens, and it continues this whole episode.
Which is completely different from the manga. They say, we're going to build a gate, and then they do it. And that's the end of the story.
I actually think we talked about that in one of the last podcasts, where literally the gate being complete is like a small panel on one of the pages. And it's like, it's done. It's like, oh my God. Okay. All right.
Congratulations.
Cool.
Also, Sam, I have to say you were completely right. Literally the first thing we see in the episode is the gross platform.
They really like, I feel like somebody did the design for that platform and they love it so much. So like, this is going to be the last time that we're going to be able to see it.
Extra angles of it.
Like, you guys need to see it multiple times. Really enjoy the fingernails coming up from the ground. Like, you guys are going to love the shit out of that. Like, that's how it goes.
So I had to pay attention to it. So did you notice that there's also ears at the bottom?
No.
Yeah. Oh my God. I thought I was tripping.
No, I was thinking, what is the wildest thing that Pythes is going to say that's about to come into my ears? I did not think it was ear. I thought he was going to say there's a nipple somewhere on there is where my head was going. I thought for sure that's where Pythes was going to go with this. But no, I did not notice the ears.
Well, it's good to know what my reputation is, I guess.
So we come back from the opening and we go straight to Graham Joe exiting the Garganta. Everybody cheers nationwide that Graham Joe is here. And he jumps out straight to Ichigo and immediately starts talking shit. He's like, it looks like the wound I gave you is healed. And Ichigo's like, yeah, you're damn right. And it's, you're looking good yourself. You know, good to see you.
Pulls out the sword.
And Grimjo immediately is like, did you think I was dead? It pulls out his sword, slashes the ground for some reason just to show off.
Effect. He also took drama class.
The ultimate Grimjo defender, Jose, is here to make sure everything goes well. And he says that he's been waiting for this moment, the moment where he can settle, you know, dot, 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 dashed, however you want to interrupt it. And that's when he gets interrupted by boobs flying over his head and clocking him. And it's Nell. Nell is here in adult form. Asterisk, everybody. So she flies over Graham Joe, goes straight and crashes into Ichigo. Classic shenanigans. And she explains that Urahara made her a bracelet that lets her switch between adult and kid form. So now she can fully be of use to Ichigo. In fact, she may never go back to being his kid as long as she has the bracelet.
Yeah, exactly.
We get a great interaction from Chad and Orihime here where if I was a betting man after I read the manga, I would have bet that this scene would have been cut.
See, I thought this was going to get cut.
I'm very shocked that this made it into the anime because I feel like I actually read something, I believe it was through last episode, and it was the Shinji bowl cut remark to Sui Fong.
Yeah.
So that whole interaction was originally going to be cut from the anime.
Oh.
And it was Kubo that actually saved that interaction. Kubo told him that he thought that scene was very funny and that needs to be in the anime because that's a great character scene between Sui Fong and Shinji, and he loved it. So I thought seeing that, I was like, that's going to get cut. It doesn't add anything to it. It's going to get cut. They adapted it. This episode
Word for word, isn't it?
This episode was pretty faithful to the manga until we get a little bit later, and then I have something else to point out. But the interaction we get between Chad and Orihime is Orihime looks fucking frazzled. That Nell is on top of Ichigo. And Chad looks at her and is like, you're probably thinking, why does he keep making unnecessary things? But don't think that Urahara is trying his best. And then Orihime is like embarrassed. Like, oh, I wasn't thinking that. Love that scene.
So good.
I love the camaraderie and the friendship that Chad and Orihime seem to have this whole series. It's really good.
They
really like it.
So close. And I mean, it makes so much sense when they've been training together and doing all this stuff together. And then they're always backing up Ichigo.
I mean, when it comes down to the wedding with Orihime and Ichigo, Chad is the best man, right? It has to be Chad.
Watch it be Uryu.
It can't be. It's got to be.
Dang. So you think Keigo's going to get shafted?
Oh, yeah. Oh, not even a chance. It's got to be Chad.
Renji?
I think there could be an argument to be made that somehow Ichigo would make it Rukia, but I don't think that would work.
I think Orihime
would
have
to be Chad.
Tatsuki and
Rukia. I think Rukia would be on the other side with Orihime. I think that's where she would belong. It's got to be Chad. I feel like there's no other person that could take it.
You can't imagine him ever losing, dude.
Correct. And he would never lose that groomsman, the best man's position.
That's right.
I have to say, Sam, I think you are crazy to think they'd cut the scene. They have been adding so much to just try and further drive in the Ichihime shipping. There's no way they were going to cut it.
But I feel like they put a really heavy scene last episode when they changed the whole cone interaction and Orihime literally falls into Ichigo's chest. I was like, okay, that's good. That seals the deal.
That's a cute thing.
I thought they would at least probably cut this and keep going forward. But no, they put it in, which I guess just goes to show, like you're saying, Pythes, they're like, fuck it. Any Ichigo and Orihime scene, we're keeping it in. Don't worry about it, baby.
Because this scene changes the dynamic, because now she's not falling into him blushing. She's like, uh-oh, another woman is falling into him.
So we continue to get Grimmjow scenes after this, and he yells at Nell to stay out of the way. Like, get out of here. And I love this interaction because Nell claps back and she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you forget that I'm number three? I don't take orders from a number six like you. I was like, oh, like that would have wounded me personally. If I was,
I would be so upset. I was like, lady?
Like, that is messed up. I would have been so mad about that. And Grimmjow immediately replies like, well, those rankings don't matter anymore because Aizen's gone. He's like, let's find out who's superior right now. Let's do it. Let's throw down. And that's when a mysterious other female character chimes in over a radio and is like, excuse me, everybody, excuse me. And that's when we see that it's Ruruka and Yukio. They're both there. The Garganta opens up and reveals this big black box. And they're like, hey, can everybody just get inside already? Like, come on, let's go. We got places to be. We'll explain once you guys are inside. Inside the box, Yodoichi asks Ichigo, okay, what do you want to know? And Ichigo is like fucking flabbergasted, like everything. Like, and we see this montage of all the characters, Yukio, Ruruka, Grimmjow, Nell. He's like, tell me everything.
Everybody was in the know except for him.
And I love that he looked toward Chad and Orihime, and he's like, right? Right? And then they're like, oh, well, actually, we already knew also.
we were hanging out in Wekomundo and they told us everything.
I forgot about that they had been so gone from part of the series and they were there with the Grimmjow when he was originally going to be introduced. I forgot that they were there and they're already in the know. They know everything.
I remember when they like showed the clip. Why was Chad holding maracas?
Because that was the moment that Grimmjow was going to remember. There was a time
that
they were
walk in.
Yeah,
there,
that they were on the screen and they were like video calling Ichigo, and he was just about to walk in, and you hear Grimmjow's voice the first time we heard it, and then they have to like pretend like they're doing something to block the curtain. That's what that was.
Oh, okay, so they were just trying to distract Ichigo, right?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
I was like, why is he holding maracas?
So I rewound that like twice. Like, what is he holding? I was like, maracas. Maybe it's a ping pong paddle. I was waiting for you to explain it.
It was hilarious though because I'm like, here, kitty, hold on, just like listen to the noise.
Yeah.
Also, I love how Nell's personality changes completely when she's not talking to Ichigo.
Right? She snapped and goes
so
like,
good. Well, I think she maintains that personality across the board to like a friendliness. Like, I'm sure she would keep it Orihime. I'm sure she would keep it Chad. But I think let's go to Camp for Your Own World, right? Camp for Your Own World, it's explained that basically her job is to keep Grimmjow and Chad.
In line, yeah.
And like this very much furthers this interaction here where she's like, the moment Grimmjow's involved, like, you shut the fuck up. Yeah. Like, she goes with this really friendly, like, bubbly woman. Like, I'm so happy to be here. Like, I'm not a kid anymore. This is great. Grimmjow says something. You shut the fuck up
you
right
shut
now.
Up,
you
sir.
Number six.
This is not your spot.
Yeah. Like, it's like, don't talk unless you're spoken to, Grimmjow.
We go from, like, happy-go-lucky Nell to the Nell that was, like, trash-talking Noitor for being weak.
Yes. Baddie.
We love her. She's so good.
So inside the box, this part confused me greatly when I was reading the manga. I had to take a second, like, really look at the visuals. So I think they did a very good job of explaining how all of this works in the anime. I will go over it and we'll do a little recap. We'll make sure everything's on board.
Good. I wrote
inside
notes for this.
So we have this thing. Yes, so we have the Yukio activates his like screen mode basically inside. He's gonna give a nice little diagram for everybody, and we see the World of the Living, and then we see the Soul Society. Part of what was throwing me off is that the words that was used in the manga that I read back in the day, same thing with you, Jose, is different from the official Viz translation that they use now.
Because someone else was translating, right?
Yeah, well, it's a fan translation because we, you know. Don't be mad, Viz, but we were reading it illegally back in the day, okay? I'm sorry.
Broke high school students. Yeah. We're sorry.
It wasn't available. This was before Shonen Jump Alpha was even a thing, okay? We were reading it online. You guys didn't have an option.
We wrote our wrongs, though. We purchased many Bleach things, okay?
Yeah, we have the whole series. It's fine. It's good. But Yodoichi then explains that the precipice world connects the two, the World of the Living and the Soul Society. Now, the precipice world, Jose, the Dongai. Okay, the Dongai. So everybody's on board here. Scattered around the precipice world are various sizes or areas of various sizes known as the Valley of Screams. How we know it, the Kyugoku. Is what it is, but the official Viz translation is Valley of Screams.
No, we don't know that as Kyugoku. I exclusively call it the Valley of Screams.
No, so Pythes, that's why you're excluded. This is a Jose and Sam conversation, please, okay? Pythes / Grimmjow, please don't speak unless spoken to, okay?
Ooh.
You're number six.
I get to be Grimmjow. Let's go.
He's like, yeah, I thought you would like that. So, yeah, you're number six, Pythes, please. Okay. So, Valley Screams, Kyugoku, which, by the way, when I was reading the other day, it was a fan translation and it said Kyugoku as well. And I was very confused. And this is where lost souls exist. The Garganta exists to fill all of the empty space in between all of those areas. So, anything that is not a Dongai or a Kyugoku / Valley Screams, I'm going to say Valley Screams from now on, everybody, just so we're all aware. Anything that
Welcome
is not a Valley
Screams. Welcome to the Grimmjow Club. motherfucker.
Anything that is not the Valley of Screams is filled by the Garganta. And while in the Garganta, the spiritual pressure becomes unstable. One can barely stand without constantly releasing their spiritual pressure to create a foothold. And this is where we see where they first originally came to Huecamundo in Thousand Year Bloodwar with Urahara, where they're constantly having to do that path. And we've seen it before with Ichigo and Retsu doing that as well. That's where they have to create the path underneath their feet. And the Valley of Screams, though, seems to be an exception to this rule, as it can somehow exist inside as a reishi space due to its different reishi structure. And as such, Kisuke identified that and decided that that could be of use, and they wanted to use it to their advantage. So that's why they brought back Ruruka and Yukio. During this this explanation, Ruruka kind of complains how easily they were found and how not happy she was about it. Worth noting, Yoruichi continues that they used Ruruka's ability to carry a small Valley of Screams in a box and then modified it into a room with rails using Yukio's ability, and they only just now completed it. They said, unfortunately, as part of the drawback, they're only able to travel the small distance from the stake that she just placed and then the stake that she placed earlier when she was sealing the Soul King in the Royal Palace.
Which was so cool, because she went in there, tried to seal him, must have stuck that thing behind him really quickly, and then everything happened.
But they said, although it's such a small distance that they can travel, the advantage they would gain from being able to appear without any spiritual pressure is huge. So they can mount a total surprise attack. Super cool. I was a little bit confused at first when I read that in the manga, because I was like, Dongai, Kyogoku's Valley of Screams, and the pictures were on screen. I was like, okay, I'm going to have to take a second and really get it. I thought in the anime they did a very beautiful, simple job of explaining. They took a Valley of Screams, they put it into a box, they put it on rails. It's a train now. They could go to and forth from the stakes. That's all you need to know. Don't think about it more than that. It's beautiful.
Due to it being animated, they did cut one of my favorite jokes, which is when Ichigo is asking for the explanation, they cut him off and just go, Ichigo, be quiet. The panels have already turned into a diagram.
That's true. That's true. I did remember reading that. That's a great one. After this explanation, we cut to Urahara, who watches the gate begin to slowly vanish again. And now, this is very interesting here. Let's note this. Nanao states that it's lacking spiritual pressure and they needed Captain Ukitake, as no other captain comes close to the spiritual pressure he possesses. Have we ever known that before this point? Is that just an insane lore drop that we just got?
Or does she only say that because she knows of Mimi Hage?
No, during the whole scene, I wasn't paying attention. I was just wondering why they didn't throw a ball at Aizen.
Great question as well. But to my knowledge, as someone who literally read the manga the day before this came out, that is not in the manga. So that is an insane scene to just throw in there. Just that Ukitake is the most highest spiritual pressure being in all of the Soul Society.
Which is
and
insane.
They needed him. Which, like you were saying, Jose, it does make sense that I'm sure Mimi Hagi does give him some sort of additional spiritual pressure. So it would make sense that he has all this Ryatsu built up inside of him. Yeah. Kind of makes sense in that one. Let's hold on. Let's put a tack on that, because I have more Ukitake questions to come back to later. So let's push forward here.
This will be good.
Mayuri chimes. So actually, sorry, I skipped the whole thing. The visors show up at this point because Lisa hops in and is like, oh, don't worry, we got you, and puts her hand on Nanao's orb. And then we see Hachi,
what is Lisa
Love.
To Nanao?
Mentor.
Mentor? Okay.
Lisa puts the hand on Nanao's orb. Then we see Hachi, we see Love, we see Hiyori. They all show up and they're all immediately given their own orb as well. And Mayuri chimes in and is like, oh, like, you know, the numbers say we're lacking spiritual pressure, so why aren't you using the spiritual pressure amplifier that I have? And opens up the wall and brings out a special machine. This is something that was, I think, high on a lot of people's lists for not wanting it to be in the manga or in the anime. It was a manga scene, and I believe in the manga it's referred to as the spiritual pressure like multiplier, like duplicator, like doubler, like it does something crazy. This one here is just an amplifier, which I feel like is a kinder word for the manga, which is very good. But a lot of people are hoping that this, like, people refer to it as a Deus Ex Machina machine, that this machine was not going to be part of the anime as a whole, because that's a pretty powerful machine. That's a pretty powerful machine to be able to double all the reishi like that. That's pretty good.
Now, is it only in that radius, or is it?
We don't know anything about it. Okay. It's so literally the only time that machine is used, and it's pulled out just for the BS reason that they don't have enough spiritual pressure. So a lot of people were hoping for an example, like Pythes was saying, they were hoping they were just going to give one to Aizen. Give one to Aizen, call it a day. Also, you know, they're all this talk about Ukitake having very high spiritual pressure. They could have maybe done something with Ukitake and had him do it really quick.
Limp ass arm.
Yeah, there was a lot of, I think, options they could have used to avoid using the machine, but the machine is not end all be all. I don't think it breaks the anime being into it, because they're going to use it and you're never going to see it again. But it is kind of like a cop out. Oh, I have this machine in my back pocket, and then it just fixes everything.
I just wanted a scene of like interns playing rock, paper, scissors to see who has to be the guy to walk up to Aizen with like an extension cord and just plug it into his chair.
Yeah, we're never going to get that now because the moment the machine comes out, the gate is like fully fledged, like good to go. And then we cut over to Shunsui now, and he is thinking of Ukitake again. And he says, I won't let your sacrifice be in vain, Ukitake, as we see Ukitake still covered in the black Mimihagi stuff. Okay, let's pause. What is their plan for Ukitake? I'm so confused. So I had a clip. So we are recording this on Saturday, by the way, in case you guys want to know what the production schedule is like. We record the Saturday night. We get it out by Sunday morning. I had a clip from the previous podcast where we were talking about Ukitake. And we were talking about how I don't know what their plan for him is. I'm sure we're going to figure out what their plan is for him next episode. We don't. We have no idea. He's still alive in this episode. Yuha has fully absorbed the Soul King. It's done. He sat in his throne. Ukitake is still covered in the black Mimihagi stuff. What is happening? What is their game plan here?
He's not dead till we get a scene of him dying.
So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking is, are they going to go back and have some sort of a scene where we get a final, like, he maybe collapses right at the end of the war, and then we get a last little, like, hug from Shunsui or something? What is going on here?
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, thank you, Pythies.
I came prepared with two very good fan theories that I received. So I posted the clip. I wasn't going to post it because I thought, like, you know, by the time I post it, this episode's going to come out. It's going to disqualify anything that we talked about. Then. It's going to be a waste of a clip. It didn't, so I posted it. And my question that I asked was, what are they planning for Ukitake? Like, what is the issue that they're planning here? And there were a couple of very good responses. So one came from a guy named Sage Aizen on Twitter. And he said, it's worth noting that in the Hell Arc, Xyloparo named Ukitake the Divine Vow, which means Kamikake, which is something that he talked about here. Mm-hmm. It says, meaning Yuha won't absorb the right hand and it will still be in Ukitake's body. So,
okay,
potentially interesting connotations. If that is the case, the right hand of the Soul King is now in Hell, which is very interesting to think about. That would presume why he's so powerful in Hell as well. Also, the massive amount of spiritual pressure that we know Ukitake has as well.
Damn.
We now know why he's so powerful in Hell. He's a warden of Hell, which would be crazy.
That's crazy.
Another one came from Rez Sunsu. He's in Discord, but he's also in the TikTok live streams all the time. He said that he is still alive at a point between life and death because Mimihagi isn't fully gone. And who has it? Uryu. Check his right hand after fighting Sinjimaru. There was a shot that very purposely zooms in on Uryu surging with power, and he activates his premature while standing. At this point, it shows his right hand surging with blue in the form of a shadowy-looking eye very briefly. So his theory is that the right hand of, you know, Soul King, Mimihagi, has now transferred some form of power to Uryu.
Interesting. Would that imply that Mimihagi knows about Uryu then?
I would say so. I would say, it goes back to the classic thing, right? Where the Soul King knows everything, Jose. That is the Soul King's thing. And that is why Yuha is so slighted by the Soul King, because the Soul King is aware of everything. He's all powerful. He knows how everything works. And he is pissed off that the Soul King continues to choose to fuck over the Quincy's. So the Soul King would have knowledge of that, Jose.
Oh.
We can take that further. So, you know, the changes of like Yuha is absorbing everything, and in the manga, the what do they call it? The Schutzstaffel are just kind of like hanging out in like a room, but they're around him the entire time in the anime. So if there was any kind of further transfer needed, Uryu was right there the whole time.
That's very true.
I have one more theory. You guys ready? This comes from Zach Brangen on Twitter. And he says that my theory is that Ukitake is what's stopping Yuha from merging the three realms together via Mimihagi. He says that he thinks his life force will be completely over once Yuha gains complete control over the Soul King, and he believes that this is going to happen during the final battle with Aizen and Ichigo.
Okay.
They're cooking.
They're all very possible. Holy shit.
I thought they were all very good. Because, like I said, I thought that for sure. Excuse me. I thought for sure this episode was going to be like, all right, Ukitake is going to be on screen. He's going to immediately collapse. It's going to be game over. It's going to be the end. We see Mimihagi. It's officially absorbed. Dunzo. But that's not the case. And he's still alive. And they reference him like fucking three times in this episode. So they are like really harping on this Ukitake thing. I think Kubo has plans for Ukitake. I don't think that's the last that we're going to see of Ukitake being referenced. I think he's going to have a last like killer play that's going to happen in the form of Mimihagi doing something.
Do you think he will manifest maybe in like the form of the Mimihage to stop Yuha during the final fight?
It's going to be like the reverse of the final Gurren Lagann fight where like he's fighting the black spiral force, but it's going to be Ukitake covered in black just punching the shit out of Yuha.
He's going to appear last minute. Yeah.
Right next to Komamura wolf form, and they're going to team up together and just start attacking. Wolf Fang Fist all over everybody.
He's riding Komamura into battle.
Oh my God.
The perfect game plan.
That'd be fire. You know it would be.
After this, we go back to Yodowichi and the gang, and Yodowichi states that they should be able to arrive to the royal palace using the stake that she drove down earlier, which is what we talked about. She secretly put one up there while she was trying to seal the Soul King originally. And she wants Ichigo to basically jump out of the Garganta, use full power, strongest Getsuga he has to his name, and just nuke Yuha the moment they exit.
Can you imagine?
Just fucking love it, dude.
Elevator door opens, boom.
I honestly love that game plan. They're like, listen, Ichigo, you have one attack that's basically like a fucking nuke. We're going to basically appear right behind Yuha. We want you to jump out, Getsuga Jujisho times 20, and just blast him instantly.
Now, so here's a side story, right? Okay, so if we could like somehow hide spiritual pressure, we put Sam in an egg, right?
Okay. And I'm following. I'm in an egg now. So I'm visualizing.
So you're about to be launched by Kukaku straight into the
throne
room.
I'm like in a cannonball, basically.
Yeah, so you're going to be thrown into that throne room, right?
Got it.
So the minute you crack, you have released your Bankai.
Got it. Yeah.
That's how we get that's why we take him out.
But the egg has to somehow be in Garganta. So I need to be thrown. What needs to happen is I need to be shot through a Garganta that then opens up on the other side. So like I'm like speeding through everything. Yeah. There you go. The super surprise cannon attack. It's perfect.
So it's like maybe it doesn't even crash, right? So it's just gonna go through, but like little pores will open up and your gas will come out.
And you're just going. I'm gonna drive by. Or we just set it in a circle, Jose, a Garganta in a circle, and I just keep coming out over and over again, just spraying.
Little did you know, Asken grabs on because he didn't want to be part of that shit
either. I love Asken, dude. Love him. So after they explain that they want Ichigo to basically nuke Yuha, Yodowichi continues saying that they're not gonna let anybody get in his way, and Ganji's like, yeah, leave it to us. And Chad says that they have a pretty good grasp on the royal guard's powers, but what exactly are Yuha's? And Orihime chimes like, man, we should have asked Osho, which is a great point, by the way. They should have asked Ichibei for more information. That would have been a beautiful idea, and I think that's a great little like nod to the audience, like, dang it, we should have asked him. Like, this guy who knows all the powers, we should have asked him. Now, this is different from the manga.
Absolutely.
Okay? In the manga, they don't know all of their powers, and they specifically point to one character that they don't know the powers, and it's Pernida. And they specifically refer to the man in the cloak. They have no fucking idea what he is. Like, they ask Yodowichi. They're like, hey, Yodowichi, what is the hooded royal guard's ability? And Yodowichi says, I do not know, but avoid that guy. And
chop off my arm.
She says, I want to take him out at range. Do not get close to him. And then we get the comment from Orihime basically saying, like, man, we should have asked Osho about it. But very interesting that I like almost the manga one a bit more, because it shows that Yodowichi is like aware that Pernida has this weird fucking ability. And she's like, guys, stay the fuck away from that guy. Like, honestly, I'm going to take him out from across the field. Like, do not get close to that hooded guy.
Well, remember, like, Yodowichi lost her arm due to Pernida.
Which is very interesting. I don't know why they changed the wording there. What do you think like the out of story reason is for them changing the wording on like, yeah, we know everybody's powers, to where in the manga it was specifically, we do not know the hooded guy's power?
It's because we got to see the hooded guy's power a little bit more. And just because each, like, remember, the squad didn't really get to see Ichigo's fight with Yuha all that much. They were fighting between all the different palaces. So they're just like, what does he do? He's like, I don't know.
But I mean, like, I feel like they still got to fight Yuha. Like, there was still a whole scene where, like, Chad, Ganji, and everybody went and tried to attack Yuha, where they can kind of get a gist, the same amount of gist that they would get of the power. And I feel like, didn't he have a conversation with all of them talking about that he can see all the futures and that's his ability, like right in front of everybody?
They were busy dealing with like the Soul King being cut in half. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah. They purposely blocked it out. Meanwhile, the guy who I feel like I would be focused on, if I saw poor Jose get his arm fucking twisted into oblivion, I would be a bit concerned with that guy. I wouldn't want that to happen to me.
I'd be paying attention to the guy with the gun.
Yeah, that's pretty important.
Yeah, that's true. You're like, when's he gonna shoot?
Listen,
fuck,
they're all pretty important, but you can make a couple things like, okay, Ichigo knows what Udi's ability is. Gerard, we saw him fight with his sword and do stuff. Then the guy with the gun, we can assume he's gonna shoot the gun. We got it. But the hooded guy who magically twists arm, that's a little bit concerning to me.
It's like Sparky Sparky Boom Man.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That is not normal.
God, Bleach has some weirdest character designs.
Lily Barrows.
Okay, I want to pull up Pernida versus Aronero, who's weirder?
Pernida versus Aronero, who's a weirder design?
Yeah, because they're both freaks.
I feel like Aronero, I feel like very has that almost like C'thun or Cthulhu,
Kind
of
like
vibe to it. So
grotesque almost.
Yeah, I feel like that's not too far out of the norm of what we're kind of used to seeing in terms of monsters. Pernida's is weird, where it's just like a veiny fucking hand that is trying to swallow you up with an eye in its palm. That's a little bit weird. But also, that brings me back to Super Smash Bros. So I feel like none of them are too far out of my brain realm for what I think something is. But They're both great designs. What do I like more? I think Otto Nieto. I think that's a cool fucking design, but they're both good.
I do like the test tube with the two floating.
Yeah, it's cool. I think that's cool.
Okay, now to go back to Smash Brothers, which hand would you say Pranati is more like? Is he the master left hand?
He's the left hand. He's
he's the crazy hand, right?
He's the crazy hand.
He's the one that's always doing this.
Yep. Yep. After that, we get Ruruka chiming in because Orihime is being a fucking downer. And Ruruka tells her basically to stop being so mopey. He's bringing everybody else down and starts attacking with like her hooded wings there.
What is she smacking her with?
So there's actually I believe it's in the manga. There's little doodles at the end of every chapter. And one of the doodles at the very end of the chapter where we saw this scene in the manga, it's of Kubo going, she actually has like little wires in her pocket that lets her control the little, little wings. Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly like the ones that everybody has now with the hoodies, and you can press the buttons on the big thing that comes down.
And people are shocked that Kubo is now designing fashion.
True. We've seen the time all the way back then. It's been rooted since 2010. It's been good to go.
I guarantee one of Kubo's joys when drawing the manga is just designing drip.
Dude, it's so cool. Makes me jealous.
We're so close to that that Shuhei tracksuit coming out, and I will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You will find a way.
I will.
So we take a brief moment to have a nice little bro moment with Ichigo and Grimmjow. And Ichigo asks Grimmjow, why is he on their side? You know, let's just level it. Let's see what's going on. And this is a classic enemy-turned-friend response that we get here. And he's like, oh, well, if Yuha wins, Hokamuna is going to be destroyed, and there won't be anywhere for me to kill you. I was like, okay. All right.
My
guy. Ichigo just smiles. He's like, okay.
Smirks. I was like, all right. He knows what's
like,
up.
He gets it. You know, he's not this tough guy. He's never going to be like, because I care about you, buddy. But he's like, I got to have somewhere to kill you. I was like, okay.
I'm like, going to fucking kill you. Got no one else can.
And this is when we cut over to now the Quincy Royal Guards as they are kind of all assembling next to Yuha. And Uryu here is thinking back on Ichigo, cutting the Soul King and then Ichigo falling to the ground after he had shot him. And this is when we see Yuha's eyes kind of appear on his head and all the Royal Guards are shocked. Like, oh my God, like that is crazy. And Asken specifically is freaking out. He's like, oh, this is not cool. Like, I don't want to fucking be here. And Yukum tells him to calm down. Like, hey, like, calm down, man. And Asken thinks to himself, how am I supposed to be calm when he looks like a fucking monster? How can you ask that of me? That is crazy. And Yuha can tell because obviously he's all knowing. And he's like, oh, do I scare you guys?
I loved when he said that. I was like, ooh.
And he's like, don't be afraid. In time, you'll be used to the appearance. And then he kind of like self-monologues here for a little bit. He's like, oh, this is what it feels like to be filled with overwhelming power. As he fucking explodes the top of the Royal Palace, he just destroys it. And we continue to Asken now. All of the pieces of the palace are like starting to crumble. And Asken is Looney Tunes running from piece to piece, like freaking out. And everybody else has a different reaction to this. So Gerard stabs his sword into the ground to hold on. Millibaro is jumping gracefully from each one like a sniper. Pernida cracked me the fuck up. He did this in the manga and he did this in the anime. He grabs a piece of rock with his fucking head. Which we know is a hand,
right? Do you remember when we were reading it for the first time and we're like, what the fuck is that thing?
Yeah. Hilarious, by the way. Hilarious. Glad they kept that in. And then Uryu and Yugrim are both just standing still on the rock. They know they're all good to go. And Asken is like trying to climb onto this rock with Yugrim. And Asken's like, how are you staying so calm? Like, we're going to fall. If we fall, we die. Which I think is also very interesting to think that also the Sturmagers will die if they fall from there.
Yeah, they know.
I think that's a cool little base where it's like, it doesn't matter what character you are. If you fall from the Royal Palace, you're just dead. Like, it's just over. And I like that is the case across the board. And all of a sudden, the rocks stop. And then Yugrim kneels down and says, what a wonderful power. Guide us, Your Majesty. And Yuha gives special props to his first boy. His number one is
my first
day
born.
One. He says, Hoshwalth, my first son, stand behind me and watch the path I take. I shall begin by reinventing our nation as each of the Squad Zero areas begin to basically glow blue and connect in the middle, making the Quincy sigil that we know we love. And then all of a sudden it turns purple. It shoots out everywhere. And then we go straight to the eye catcher of the episode.
Weird Fire. Eye catchers too, by the way.
Yes, I actually have the translations for both.
Oh.
Give me 1 second. I'll pull them up for you guys.
And I have, did you get the note that Kubo wrote on it?
No, go ahead.
You know, the second one, which will be about, you know, the Valley of Screams. Kubo wrote a thing on Twitter that just said, if you're confused about it, go watch the first movie.
Okay, I have more information about that. He didn't write that on Twitter. That is from the actually end of chapter doodle. Again,
okay,
like the
so
same
the,
one with
the
Ruruka.
The end, yeah.
That is from the end
That's
chapter
hilarious.
Doodle in the manga where this was first introduced. And that was actually when they had the discussion. So the discussion will happen a little bit after this. But in the manga, when Ichigo has the discussion with Ruruka about how she put the Valley of Screams inside of her box, the end thing is like, if you're confused about the Kyugoku, go watch the first movie for more information, which I feel like is very cool.
Product
very, very cool. So the first eye catcher is called Gate, and it has a super cool picture of Urahara kind of behind the, once again, the fleshy platform that they've all been standing on. Gate, a method of transportation invented by Kisuke Urahara to enter the Soul Society without using the heavenly pillars. By refining the matter that was generated in the distortion between Soul Society and the Dongai, and between the Dongai and the present world, and fusing it with the spiritual pressure of Shinigami and Quincy, a gate is created that directly connects the faraway Soul Society and the Soul Society. Is with a double. I don't think that's supposed to be double. It can only be used until the defense barrier of the Soul Society that was broken when Ichigo Kurosaki entered the Soul Society is repaired. It is a one-way means of transportation, as it is difficult to meet the conditions of at the destination. So it connects one part of Soul Society to the really other far side of Soul Society, which in this case is the Royal Palace, but it can only be used to connect to the Royal Palace because Ichigo broke the barrier and it's still broken.
Could you get down from the Royal Palace with a parachute?
It would take a very long time.
I would assume what we know now, and obviously I don't think they know this on the ground, but knowing that if they win, all Squad Zero is going to come back. They could hook you up with some sort of a way down. You're fine. So if you win, you're good. But if you're losing and you're trying to escape, you're screwed.
I don't know, man. I just want to parachute out like it's the first Power Rangers movie.
The second title card, titled Kyogoku, which Valia screams, everybody, but it specifically says Kyogoku right here. A place where various kinds of fallen souls, large and small, gather around the boundary that connects Soul Society and the present world. Souls that have fallen out of the cycle of reincarnation between the present world and Soul Society due to accidents while passing through the boundary gather over many years and are generated. The only reason why Kyogoku is the only place that can maintain a spiritual pressure or a spiritual space in the black cavity where spiritual pressure is unstable is due to the differences in spiritual structure. Now, this is the important part, everybody. Ready? Ichigo Kurosaki once went to the Kyogoku after being involved with the thought prayer bead during an incident. I don't think that thought prayer bead, does anyone know what that is?
I don't remember that being involved in the first movie, but I also haven't watched it in years.
That might be a mistranslation. I believe that's a specific place that they're saying in that one. But the most important part to take away from that, everybody, is visuals. The image that is associated with this one, where it is Senna's ribbon and the autumn leaves from the first movie, which is that's the whole theme of the fucking first movie. So I feel like this eye catcher, which we're going to see more related to this later, but I feel like this whole eye catcher was just like, hey, if you guys don't know that this is talking specifically about the first movie and the first movie's canon, like, I'm going to beat you over the head with a stick. Like, like, take this image. Like, it is, we're talking about Valley Screams from the first movie. So get on.
Confirming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I could add another one to the list of people not trusting Ichigo again. Every filler arc in every movie, Ichigo has to fight Soul Society for some dumb reason. And because filler arcs and movies aren't canon, we don't got to worry about it. But now we do. First movie's canon. I can talk shit about it.
There you go.
True. So let's get to the part where Ruruka talks about this more with Ichigo and where it becomes canon. Firstly, we go back to the cube and Yukio does a quick little exposition just telling everybody, but for the reference, I'm not coming outside of this cube. I'm not going to be part of it. Fair. And Gonju gets upset and stomps over there. He's like, what do you mean you're not going to come out of it? And Yuka's like, I don't even know who you are. Like, why are you talking to me?
I love that part.
And then we have a nice little interaction in chat where Hime again being best buds. And they're both like, didn't Ganju introduce himself to Yukio earlier? And they're like, yeah, but Yukio ignored him. So it's fine.
I love that little bit.
And Ganju continues to yell at Yukio saying like, well, if they lose, the Garganta is going to be destroyed. Like, you're not going to be safe in here. And Yuka's like, well, do you plan on losing? And that's when Ichigo cuts in. He's like, okay, Ganju, like, stop. He beat you. He just he played the ultimate ace card. He beat you. And that's when Ichigo turns to Ruruka and says, hey, you stay as well. Ruruka was not happy about this, which I got to give credits to Ruruka. She's not my favorite character, but she was ready to fucking throw down, apparently. Yeah, she was going to come with them. She was like, I'm going out there with you guys. We're going to fuck this shit up. And then Ichigo was like, no, you need to stay here. And she was pissed. But Ichigo continues to explain that he has been to the Valley of the Screams before. Again, once again, hint, nudge, nudge. And he knows that Ruruka's ability allows her to put cute things inside of her box. So she must have worked really hard for them, as the Valley of the Screams is anything but cute. And he says to do one more thing for him and stay here with Yukio and then be ready to get them out at a moment's notice. Very cute scene. I like it a lot. I love this scene, specifically following it up with the Ganju part where he kind of mentions, like, you've grown, Ichigo. Yeah. He was like, oh, have I?
I really like that.
And
then
Ganju's like, oh, well, maybe you've been like that all along. And like, Chad and Rahimi look alike, proud parents.
Like,
I love this whole interaction.
My boy.
I think it's so good. There is a slight bit of change here in the manga. It's kind of always been worded as Ichigo's like, oh, like, I've been there once before for an event. We've never had the visual. We've never had all this other stuff kind of hitting you over the head with this. The anime really is like, guys, Valley of Screams, the first movie, Senna, it's working. It's good. It's good to go. And then at the end of this chapter is when we get that doodle that I talked about earlier, where it literally says in the manga, see the first movie for more info on the Kyogoku.
I mean, out of all the movies, it is the least intrusive to canon. You could easily slot it anywhere and it's fine.
And I bet coming from Kubo's perspective, the first movie was so, like, probably meaningful to him. It's like the first Bleach movie ever done.
It's
very well animated. The animation for the first movie, I still think, is some of the best. The soundtrack is really good for the first movie as well. And I 100% agree. It's like, that movie, out of all of them, is the easiest to go, like, yeah, that happened. Because it takes place in its own place, does something else. It doesn't affect anything. It has its own character. And it introduces its own little world. It's fine.
Take place right after the Bound Arc.
Which is why it's the best movie. So we cut back to the gate after this, and we get a happy little smile from Mihiro and Urahara. And we go to Ichigo, and they begin to open the door from the box. And then we go back to Shunsui once more, and he's looking down at all the regular Soul Reapers, the lieutenants, the third seats, so on and so forth. He says, thank you, everyone. Wish us luck. Now, we have a collection of Easter egg characters here, a complete collection. Let's see. I was gonna save an image here, but I guess I'm just gonna spoil it for you. We get a panning shot. First, it's of the back, but then we also see them of the front. So we see Maki Maki. Love the boy. We see Yasuchika Lemura. That's the co-third seat with Hanatoro that we disputed last time. He's still there. We see Shino and Ryunosuke, who is the first two characters from Bleach, Sazen, and Blood War that we saw running from the Hollows. Ooh. We see Sanosuke, a.k.a. Afro Man. He's there. But in between Sanosuke and Shino, we see the most random fucking character. An insane random character.
I wrote down
the
his name.
The guy that fucking Chad first beat when he entered the Soul Society Rescue Arc, which, by the way, this is apparently not the first time that he's been in Bleach, Sazen, and Blood War.
Really?
He's been in here before. So his name is Tasafusu Njoji.
Yep.
And he is the third seat of the 8th Division, which would have been, back in the day, would have been Shunsui and Inoue Squad. Yeah. And this is the guy, I think he was literally like about to release his Zanpakuto, and Chad one-punched him and just moved on with his life. He's standing there right behind everybody, proud as fuck to be happening. He was also in Bleach, Sazen, and Blood War at the funeral for Sasakibe.
He was there
as well. This guy has been like a fucking sleeper agent through all of Bleach, Sazen, and Blood War. He's been at all these events helping out. Great guy. But what a weird character to bring along to all this stuff. That is so weird.
It just goes to show that Kubo's really paying attention to everything and being like, toss this in there.
Just like out of all the characters, though, like I guess he was in the manga, at least for the Sasakibe scene, because all this stuff is new, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that character was in the manga for the Sasakibe one. This is all new, and I guess they just brought him over. They're like, here, just send him. Just, I wonder if somebody was looking at the Sasakibe funeral. I was like, okay, what characters can we bring over? Because all these characters, I don't know if Maki Maki was at the funeral, but they're doing a great job of keeping all these side characters coming in. I don't know. They're it's crazy.
It just goes to show you that even a random character can be well liked by the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a very low hanging fruit to make everybody happy, where it's like, hey, if you're like a real deep fan, he's there. And it's just a random guy from the first arc. It's crazy.
So while I was looking up his name earlier, because I don't know if Sam's gonna write it down, I did come across some fun facts about it. Would you like to hear the only one that matters?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Apparently, he has a massive crush on Soy Phone.
So I saw there was this. I was going to cover this for an episode of Bleach Boys. There is a part, I believe it was actually in a data book that this was done for.
Yes.
Where every squad was asked three questions for what are you looking for in potential recruits? And what would you say to somebody who's looking to join the squad? Or something like, there's a set of three questions. And it was asked by the captain and asked from the lieutenant. And they each had to answer it. And then part of it is every squad had to draw a little a little welcome thing, and it says squad eight in a picture. Squad eight, the guy who was tasked to do their drawing was this guy. Yeah. He was the one that had to do the artist drawing. It was a drawing of Soy Phan.
Yeah.
for squad eight, it was a drawing of Soy Phan.
Don't get me wrong, I mean she's great, but damn.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, man. The commitment.
You'd be doing the same thing if you had a chance to draw something. It'd be Nemo.
100%. I'd have a full magazine spread.
Mm-hmm. Sam, if you guys want to do that, I will bring it. I have that data book, and we can go through it.
Okay.
Oh, that'd be
perfect. We'll do that one day.
Oh, somebody asked me, I was live streaming, and they asked, what's the moment I'm looking forward to the most? So I stuck to my guns, Jose. I said, when Nemu fucking dies, fucking bitch. I said, when she gets rotted into the ground. And somebody was genuinely why do you hate Nemu?
They don't know. I'm like, so sorry.
I was like, listen, I was being a D1 hater. I just like, it's Jose's favorite character, and I'm going to lick the tears off the ground when she fucking dies. And everyone's like, oh my God.
Is that what prompted everyone to be like, what is the lore between you two?
No. I forget what prompted that, Jose. I don't even remember. So there was a live stream that we did. I think we were just finishing reading the manga. I don't know what we were doing. And someone was asking about something. I think maybe someone was asking about the wedding or like, how did Jose and I meet? And I was telling a little bit of the backstory between Jose and I. We have known of each other since middle school. We went to the same middle school together. And I was telling everybody that I used to be part of the popular kids. And Jose was always, since day one, he's an OG nerd. He was part of the nerdy kids playing handball and running around the park. Okay. Jose has always been that.
That sounds like fun.
Nobody believed me. Not a single person believed that I used to be part of the popular kids. And luckily, Jose was there, came out of the blue like fucking Batman, was like, hey, guys.
I saw that you were streaming the last, I don't remember what I was doing, but yep. I got the notification saying Weebs Guild is streaming. So I was like, oh, I got to pop in and see what Sam's doing. I popped in and I heard my name. I'm like, okay, interesting.
Yeah. And then Jose was like, no, it's true. Like, da, da, da. And so I was telling everybody, and I just was telling Katie about this. I guess maybe she didn't know. I was telling her, which this is true, by the way, Jose and I always knew of each other. We had a couple of classes in middle school, but we were not friends in middle school. We were not. Jose was always friends with Danny and Josh and everybody, right? Josh went to our middle school. They were always close friends, and we had a mutual friend, and his name was Alec. But I was friends with Alec on my own. You were friends with Alec on your own. We did not overlap.
I've been friends with Alec in second grade when he, you know, I'm not going to, you know, destroy his name, but he showed me a picture I was not supposed to be looking at.
Yeah, let's not go into that. But we have independently been friends with somebody else. So when I went to high school, they do a thing here in California for our high school, at least. It's called the Week of Welcome. It is a voluntary week that you go to. You do not have to go to it. But because the way the classes work coming from middle school to high school, the high school class setup is so different. They offer this thing where, hey, come to school a week early. You're basically being like shorter versions of all the classes, and we'll show you like, here's where your class is going to be, then go to here. Here's where you go for breaks. Here's where you go for lunches. It's kind of like a brief introduction to high school. Yeah.
And it's very common, specifically in California, to mix multiple middle schools together. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of like get to know people and become friends with people before you get to school.
So, and that's why I wanted to go, because my friend group, there was five of us that were like close friends in that friend group, and two of them were going to a different school, and it was going to be me, my friend Charlie, and my friend Cody, that we were all going to go to this school. My friend Charlie and Cody, they were big dudes. They are not like fat, but they were like, one was a Samoan and they were like built guys. So when we went to Week of Welcome, they do an orientation at first where like everybody's in this small little auditorium. They're like, hey, like, welcome to the school. Like, here's what we offer. We have football, we have basketball, you know, track and field, wrestling. Like, we have all this stuff that you can offer. They immediately were like, we're going to do football. And I was like, it's like, I do not want to do football. I hate football. I don't want to get hit. I don't enjoy being in pain. I don't want. And they're like, dude, you'd be so good as like a running back or like a wide receiver. Like, you could just run all the way there. No, thank you. Damn. Not interested.
And that's before your growth spurt, too. So you
won't. Well,
like,
no, my growth spurt happened
over the summer, right?
Over the summer. So this conversation happened right at the beginning of Week Welcome, where I was already having my growth spurt.
Was that during our first class? Because we had all three classes together that
so
day.
This was during, so I don't know if you remember, there was right when you walk in, Jose, they sat us down in the small little
the little auditorium.
And they, that's where they start telling you about all the stuff that they offer. That's during this that we had this conversation. Mm-hmm. And then we went to my first class, and I had Alec in there. So I sat next to Alec. And then you came in, and then you sat next to Alec. And then it was like, oh, awesome.
Pedro sat next to us.
Then Pedro. Pedro's not relevant to the story, but Pedro was there as well. We love Pedro. And then went to the next class. I didn't have Alec, but I saw Jose. I was like, oh, like, great.
I think we did the Spider-Man meme. We're like, I know you.
Yes. So we sat down next to each other, and then we went to the next class. And then, again, I saw Jose in my class. We had all three. There's only three classes that help a freak welcome. All three of them, I had Jose in my class. Every single one of them. So Jose and I got very close in Week of Welcome. Because I think it was like only you and I. Was Danny even going to this thing? I don't think
he
Dan
was going. But you would, like during our recesses or our breaks, you would go hang out with Charlie and them.
Well, and during the recesses, you had to stay with your class that you were with, which was part of it. So like, I remember it was like almost being in elementary school, guys. And Steve and mine were in high school. For one of ours, they're like, we're going to go play Duck Duck Goose.
Yeah, they were making us play like random games.
Yeah, it's like children games. But we had to stay close to each other because like you had to stay in the class. And the whole part of it was to get to know your other classmates, so you have a little bit of an edge up, so you're not like lonely when you go into high school, which worked out very well for me. So that's where Jose and I got really close. And then once school actually started, I still saw Charlie and Cody every once in a while. But they, like, when you join football, you're like, that's your life. Like, you're in football. You hang out with the people that play football. Like, that's where you're going at all times. But so then I started hanging out with Jose and Danny, and Josh didn't show up until sophomore year.
Second half of sophomore year.
But then we had our own Alec was part of our
Alec
friend
was
group.
Part of the group.
We made a big friend group out of those people, and that's when I got to know Jose, and we got really close.
Eventually, we whittled it down, and it just, you know, the Weebs Guild was formed.
Yep. And we're the true survivors, and that's how I know Jose. A little bit of lore for you guys.
At what point did someone pull out a Bleach manga and go, guys, check this out?
I don't know.
Oh, I think that might have been me. So what happened was David was still hanging out with us, David Tran. And so I remember it was like maybe the first or the second week of high school. And I had already been watching Naruto, One Piece. I had heard about Bleach but wasn't sure about it. All I remember was the Toonami promo where he goes with I'm just a 15-year-old kid who can see spirits. And I was like, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
And David goes, you should read this book.
Our high school was pretty, I would say pretty forward because it had...
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Manga in the library since the day we started.
Inuyasha was in there.
Yeah, and you know, okay, keeping track, we're high school kids. We would always take the Inuyasha. We wouldn't do anything nasty to it, but we'd take the Inuyasha out. In case you guys don't know, in the first volume of Inuyasha, you could see Kagome's tits.
Yep.
So that was a big, lovely book that like you pass around of high school. So that's, I think, probably how we all knew we liked manga. And then, yeah, probably, I don't know who started. I would believe it was you that started the Bleach stuff.
Because we started talking about... shows that we would watch, and I think we started off becoming friends mainly because of Batman.
Yeah,
we
love
both
Batman.
Had a huge love for Batman. Mm-hmm. And then it just progressed into everything nerdy.
Yep.
Because you told me you would go to Comic-Con.
Yep.
You guys are so much better than me because I would take those pictures from Inuyasha and Ron the One Half, and I would rip the pages out the manga and take them home.
You're a horrible person. Matthews. You're a horrible person.
But I guess to sum up that whole story, this podcast is because of Jose. He started it.
Take it as what you will. Okay, I mean, there's two sides of the story. Take it as what you will.
What's the other side?
That Jose wouldn't have even had the luxury of knowing me if it weren't for Alex. So we can really draft it
all the way back to then. I would have been like, who's that tall motherfucker playing football?
Yeah,
you are peer pressured into football.
Yeah,
could you imagine it? Football. It's funny though, because I did sports throughout all of high school, and me and Sam and the boys were not like treated any differently. We weren't like fucked with at all, you know, per se, because we were the nerdy kids playing Yu-Gi-Oh! In the library and stuff like that.
I was telling people on the stream also that we used to walk home together every day. That's also why Jose and I are so close. We walked home with you and I every single day.
Yeah.
You and I walked home from school because we lived very close to each other, where at one point, like, probably I would say 80% of the walk home, we walked together, and then we split off at the very end.
Yeah, right where the light is, we would go different directions.
So we have seen a lot of crazy shit together and been through a lot of crazy stuff just from walking home. So we kind of trial by fire, but we've made it past the nice calm part, and then we're good. You know, they say that a lot of relationships that start in very, like, so like an action movie, for example. I'm thinking of something. Let's take it to National Treasure. The first one, they fall in love. The second one, they divorce. Because they say that a lot of the relationships that start in like these high octane spots, when it becomes calm, they start fighting and they break up.
Yeah, they get bored.
We
of each
made
other.
It through that, Jose. We started high octane with Oliver walking home. We walked through probably like five fucking fights. I walked through a gang fight by myself one time because Jose was at wrestling. It was
so sorry.
It was a crazy time.
To be fair. When I joined wrestling, I thought it was going to be like the one on TV with chairs and ladders.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know it was going to be Olympic-styled wrestling.
Okay, now you didn't answer my question. Who is the person that won the most Yu-Gi-Oh! Matches? I need to know.
Oh, my God.
Easily, dog. So, easily.
Sam built a Six Samurai deck to those who do not know is the most annoying and spammy deck that once we got into college when we had a little bit of money, we'd just blow it all on Yu-Gi-Oh cards just fight Sam.
We spent so much money on Yu-Gi-Oh cards. It was crazy.
Josh built, was it the Dark World deck?
Dog, I was just telling Cootie, there was a time where, Josh, you remember college. I don't know if you, I don't think you were in our English class, Jose. We were in English 100, and it was me, Danny, Josh, and I think
No, it was
Lewis.
Me. I was there with my ex-girlfriend, too.
Okay, so we were there, and Josh showed up late, and this fucking guy, he packed all of his shit in a briefcase, dog. I don't know how, I think we were talking about Kaiba and how cool it was that he shows up like that, and Josh is like, no shame, like, here we go. I'm gonna show up and put all of my paperwork, like, there were decks inside of it also, but he also used it for all of his papers, all of his college stuff. So he shows up late one day to English class, walks in the last person, we're already classes started, and he sits down and he puts his briefcase on the thing and you're ka-dunk, ka-dunk. That is so embarrassing. That is so embarrassing.
Let me paint the picture of how it originated. Ooh, I almost hit that. Danny bought one because he got tired of carrying around all of his, and he just randomly bought it with his fast money. I mean, you know.
But Danny only used his for decks.
For decks. And Danny filled it up with decks. So Josh was like, oh, that's cool. And I think we gassed Josh up. We're like, oh, how cool would you be if you put all of your like school stuff in there? So he started doing that because it's like, you know, I got to look cool. He's got to impress some. He had to impress She Josh. Remember?
Ah, that fucking bitch.
So it was me in the corner. I think it was you, and I think we shoved my ex girlfriend to the side.
Yeah.
And then in front of us was Danny, Tommy, and then Josh.
There you go.
Which is where he barges in, but he like opens the door really hard because professors used to lock them, and if they locked him, it counted as an absence.
Yeah.
And you only had a certain amount. So he smacks the door open. You just hear open up, and Josh like heavy breathing, runs in, and exactly like Sam said, just all this loud noise, and the teacher's just standing there.
It's
waiting
fucking embarrassing, dude. It's making me cringe thinking back to it. It's so embarrassing.
It's because Sam couldn't keep it in. He wouldn't.
Dude,
stop
I was
giggling.
Dying. I was dying, dude. I couldn't stop. It was so funny.
It was so bad. We were terrible together.
Mm-hmm. Back to bleach. Everybody.
Sorry, you know.
Turn back
the pendulum.
Yes. But the thing you guys should take away from that story is that I was popular, Jose was not. Okay, so we're back to Urahara. He's opening the gate now as everybody enters, and we get our first look at the brand new fancy Quincy landscape as it does this beautiful, like, CG shot where it, like, zooms towards Ichigo's gang. And, by the way, I pointed this out in my watch through, and a lot of people I don't think saw it. Nell's ass is just, like, full on out. Just, like,
I was just, like,
full cake, man.
She is caked up.
And it's a back shot of everybody, so I think you don't pay too much attention to me, but oh, my God. Like, it is hanging out there.
Wow.
Does this make up for Yoruichi last episode?
Yeah, they got it.
They take some to give them.
That's how it goes. Ichigo immediately asks where they're at, and Chad is like the first one to mention, like, this isn't right. This is a Quincy landscape. Apparently, Chad's a master
architect
of Quincy landscape. He knows exactly what it looks like.
He saw what happened to Soul Society.
I wouldn't immediately know. Like, if I was Chad, I'd be like, oh, this is Quincy landscape. Like, oh, excuse me, Chad. Did
you
pull
studied,
out? You
know,
you pull out your history book, Chad. Like, what are you talking about?
Hang out with Orihime. He hangs out with Uryu too. He's like, hey, Chad, this is what my people's stuff looks like.
Mm, of course.
And then Chad goes, I have cactus.
Bro, the last thing that Chad and Orihime saw before they launched into that rocket at the Soul Palace was a Quincy landscape.
A half Quincy landscape that was merged with the Sarite. He doesn't know what the true landscape looks
Quincy
like. He has no idea. He maybe saw one tower
it
that you
exactly
he saw one tower that Yuha was part of.
Remember, Chad is very observant because he could read Orihime's thoughts as well.
Yeah.
True.
I can't ever imagine Chad being wrong.
So we go back to the Gotei 13, and Shinji is yelling at Kisuke, like, this is wrong. Like, where are we at? And Kisuke's like, no, like, the coordinates are correct. Like, we are above the Sarite, and this should be the Royal Palace. And that's when Yoruichi steps back and kicks the stake, and Yoruichi's like, oh, shit. And Shunsui chimes in. We're doing a lot of cutting back and forth here. Shunsui chimes in and says, in other words, the town that was just lifted from the Sarite is now rebuilt atop a demolished royal palace. And Shinji's like, that is fucking ridiculous. There's no way that happened because it just happened like 2 minutes ago. And Shunsui's like, well, that's just how powerful our enemy is. And Yoruichi turns to Ichigo and is like, looks like the palace is definitely the royal palace, or this place is definitely the royal palace. That damn Yuha, he rebuilt the royal palace to his liking. And then we get another beautiful swinging shot where it shows more of the architecture. Looks super, super good. And Shunsui starts to walk towards the edge of one of these things. He's like, take a look at the edge. It's a circle. This area is probably one of the Squad Zero's right in, but we can't see the Royal Palace that should be floating about, or that should be floating above it. But I'm going to pause for a second. Okay, and I have a genuine question, Pythes, and I hope you have an answer. How does Shunsui know so much about what the Royal Palace is like?
He's smart.
He's noble, right? And he does a lot of digging.
Yeah, he is the guy that is always in the archives.
You think there's just a lot of books about, like, the setup of the royal palace? And also, who would be writing those books? Like, do they get sent, like, kicked down from Ichibe and, like, they go down to the architecture? Like, there's only been five-ish people that have gone up there, right? Aside from the rando guards that got destroyed when Sinjimaru was first fighting. But, like, who's writing these books?
Well, I mean, who writes the New Testament where they're describing how, like, heaven is, the pearly gates? I imagine they're just like, yeah, we have five. There's, like, five palaces. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
They're all circular. Jot that down, everybody. They're all circular. That's a key identification of what the Squad Zero's areas are. It's a circular plate. Unless maybe there's like some days, it's kind of like Mount Fuji in Japan. If it's a very clear day, some days you can see it out in the distance and you can look up and it's like, oh, that's the Royal Palace up there.
With an ice cap on top.
Yeah. That's the new
kind of hype. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a question about this scene and I'm very confused. So you see Soy falling in this scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
When did she get healed?
Great question.
Yeah, because she's not wearing any of the bandages across her body. She's just full cleavage, like, on the side.
I saw on Twitter somebody was like thirst posting about it.
A lot of people were going nuts about it.
So I was reading that same chapter in the manga, and she is still bandaged up. And then I was like, well, maybe it's just manga only. So I go back to last episode. And she is also completely bandaged up.
I'm going to say it's probably a continuity error, and I would feel pretty confident that I bet when the Blu-ray releases, they fix it. Because if that's the case, I bet they go back and they add the wraps afterwards, which people are going to be fucking sad about. But I have no idea. I don't think there's an explanation because we know she's standing on the platform the whole time. So there's no way that she would get healed. But Momo's there, and Momo's healed before.
She's got good healing abilities.
Yeah, there's no Hanatoro present, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. But like Momo already got her.
Isane's there.
Oh, that's true.
True, but she wasn't doing anything. She wasn't actively healing.
Let's give the full credit to Isane, okay? Let's just headcanon that Isane fully healed using her magical powers, and that's how good Isane is.
There you go, everybody. Gave you thirst.
Yep. Also, I think you're crazy. I think they're not going to fix that for the Blu-ray, because did you see those shots? I think the animators were very happy to include them.
I mean, I was too.
I wonder if it becomes a big enough, I don't think I saw anybody complaining about it, but I think if it gets pointed out enough that it is a continuity error that has happened, I can see them going back and adding bandages.
I got very distracted because I was like, wait, what? Why?
So Urahara makes a comment that basically he is like, oh, so you're saying the royal palace has been brought down? And then we see Yushiro, he senses Yodoichi's spiritual pressure, and Yodoichi senses it back. And she tells Ichigo that she can sense her younger brother's spiritual pressure, Yushiro. And he's the one that became the head of the Shihon clan after she left. And Ichigo is like shocked that she has a younger brother. And he's like, why didn't you tell me? Like, why didn't you tell me anything about this? And Yodoichi's like, I don't have to tell you anything. You're not my fiance or something. And super slighted here. I've been posted this the moment I watched the episode. I put the picture up on our Instagram and everything. Follow us on Instagram at The Weebs Guild, by the way. They cut that whole little interaction. They cut a great scene here, a really great scene. And I'm really sad they cut it. And it's not important to the manga or like to the story or anything like that. So I can see why they did it. But if they're keeping the Orihime and the chat interaction, I would have loved this scene. Because it's also another fun one with Ichigo and the gang, which is so good. And the big difference here that is in the manga, we get two panels, which are fucking funny. And one of them is, they're both the same thing. They're of Ichigo and the gang trying to vision what Yodoichi's brother could possibly look like based off of Yodoichi. And the first one we get, this is like really buff and brawny guy. Like giant, like looks like could be related to Dodonbo. Really buff, really huge, looks mean. And Yodoichi chimes in like she can see this visual. It's like, that's not what I look like. That's not it. And then the next one is like this smooth cat samurai with like a little piece of something hanging out of his mouth, like a little wheat thing hanging out of his mouth. And Yodoichi's like, not that form either. And like, that's the last we get. Very funny, very sad that was cut. I see why. It doesn't affect the story, but man, that would have been hilarious. Really funny.
It'll be in the Blu-ray.
Yeah, track record so far, Jose, is they actually don't add very much in the Blu-ray. So I don't think we're going to get I think our hopes for anything Blu-ray editions should be at the bottom of the barrel.
It'll be in the Weebs Guild edition.
There you go.
Joke at the end of the last episode.
Oh, yeah. It'll come back. It'll be like the Rush Hour movies, like all the action movies from the 2000s where the credits will roll. And they'll have the little bloopers. Outtakes.
Yes.
Oh, that'll be all right there. They'll all show that at the very end. It'll be great.
Those outtakes are crazy. I love that shit.
They're the best parts of those movies. They're great. They're really good.
Shrek did it.
I gotta rewatch that. The first two Rush Hours are so good.
After this, Yushiro jumps forward to try to get to Yodoichi, and this is where we find out, Pythie, shout out, I shouted you out every time I've read this and watched this, is that he can't create a foothold, and he doesn't know why they can't, and he's saved by Renji just before he's about to fall. And Byakuya is the one that explains, which I really like this explanation here, and says that the ratio density is quite high, so normally it should be very easy to create a foothold here. The only reason they can't right now is because the enemy controls all of the Reishi in the area, and it makes sense for them to have prepared a battlefield that would be disadvantageous to them, and the Quincy's can manipulate and use the Reishi in their surroundings, so it would definitely be something that their leader could do, especially one that has killed the Soul King. Mm-hmm. I love this visual, and to think that, like, Yuha controls all of the Reishi in the area. That is an insane feat. That is crazy. And, like, anything that they could use Reishi-wise, spiritual pressure, anything like that, he's like, nope, already called it. That's mine. You guys have nothing.
It perfectly makes sense, like, thematically, because what are the Quincy's known for? What has Uryu been using since the time he was introduced? Reishi subjugation. That's what they do. Like, oh my god. That's, how do you beat that?
So smart to have that during a war, too. You're just like, now they're fighting on your terms.
Yep. Yeah, and it's like, even to the point where it's like, man, we walked into a shitty spot here. Like, that is brutal.
And they're all super far away from each other, right?
No. No, they're close. Well, like, you're talking about Ichigo and the gang, yeah. And the Gotei 13. Yeah, they're pretty far, but they'll get close eventually. But it's also like one of the things that Urahara said when they were going up is that there's not a way down. So now they are there. Like, they are stuck, and it's basically like they got teleported into like a swamp, and they're like, well, shit.
And I mean, what was Yoruichi's plan? Her plan was, we're gonna come out right behind him, and you hit him with your best. They're like, well, we can't do that anymore because you see the ruins of what was the Soul King's palace, just kind of fucked up. I had a great point, and I just completely lost it.
Okay, you might get it later.
We can swing back. So Soifan chimes in here and says that it's true because she can't sense the Soul King's spiritual pressure. And Shunzui's like, well, the good news is that we can sense Ichigo's party, which is very good that their advanced party hasn't been completely defeated. And if the Soul King died at the hands of the enemy, we would just need to defeat the enemy and then decide on a new Soul King. And if Ukitake could talk, he'd probably say the same thing. Mm-hmm. We're once again harping that he's still alive. He just can't talk currently. And I feel like once again, knowing what we know, that Ichigo is being set up to be the Soul King replacement just in case, it's kind of crazy that Shunsui attributes that exact thing to Ukitake's reasoning again, because Ukitake was also the one that did the Substitute Soul Reaper program. So he's also somebody who kind of set that up. And now he's also like, you know, Ukitake would probably also be down to just choosing a new Soul King. I'm like, man, who is this Ukitake guy that we don't know? Like, Shunsui knows this guy and he's crazy.
The savage.
I think he knows that Ukitake is like, we know Ukitake is a very nice guy. We know that. But I think Ukitake is also someone who's like, he sees the bigger picture and he knows what needs to be done. And that's where he's trying to come from, this point of like we got to do this, you know?
Ukitake is the guy who could make the hard decisions, but it would tear him up inside. Okay, I remember what my point was. From like a meta example, I think all the fights in the sky in Fate Karakura Town kind of got a little samey. So I think just making sure that all the fights happen on the ground will make them more visually interesting.
I agree with that as well.
It will also make a certain scene and a thing that Mayuri does later on really cool.
Let's see. So Shunsui continues on that if we can't rendezvous with Ichigo's party, we must forge ahead on the path that we were given. We're the 13 court guard squads, so let's advance for the sake of the 13 court guard squads. And we get this really cool shot here that it's of Shunsui, and then behind him is basically like all the lieutenants or lesser that are behind him. So just a quick head count here. We have Rukia, we have Momo, we have Nanao, we have Hiyori, we have Shuhei, we have Omida, respect. We have both of Ukitake's people, co-third seats, we would call them. We have Lisa, we have Isane, and different from the manga, actually fucking insane, different from the manga, Mashiro is there. We talked last episode
that
Mashiro isn't going to be seen ever again. That this is the end of Mashiro right at that part where they're giving the speech. And that's going to be the last time Mashiro is here in the crowd with everybody up at the Royal Palace. Now, Mashiro fans out there, I'm going to speak to you guys. How sad is it going to be when she was brought up just to be another person that gets sniped by Lilibarro? Like, would we want that more than her just being forgotten by Kubo?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's another thing. All right. I've been cooking with my boy Robert in the Discord.
Oh my god.
Mashiro versus Robert, boys. It's on the table. Mashiro versus Robert. The perfect anime only fight for people that were forgotten and never, well, actually in the manga, he was not forgotten, he was killed. But the anime is still open books, open ended, could be great.
Robert versus Shinji. No. Robert versus Omida.
The ultimate dream team.
Robert versus Omida and Mashiro. The double team.
Perfect.
There we go.
So when she does her super Mashiro kick, he's gonna put her on the spike ball, and he's gonna throw that at her with full force.
Swing her around for more momentum, Jose, and then she hops off into super Mashiro kick.
Yep.
There's annihilating that thing, Robert. The thing from X-Men 3 where Colossus throws Wolverine.
Yeah, exactly. We're cooking here. It's gonna be happening. Hey, it's perfect.
What was that comment earlier in the week that you sent?
Which one?
It was the one on Instagram that you sent me and Pythies. It was the one with Robert and Candace.
Oh, did I talk about this on the podcast already?
I don't know if you.
I don't think so.
Okay, so on our Robert Accutron short, this is by Christian Gesso 6674. He left a beautiful comment. It's pinned right now, but we're going to shout it out because he had a great idea for how we could bring Robert back to the anime. He says, okay, hear me out. I have an idea. If Robert, Candace, and Minnie are alive, they are much weaker now, and it's possible that they'll still side with Yuha and interfere. Who's there too weak to fight Yuha and his guards but strong enough for a post-Ashwellens Terminator? Inoue versus Robert. He says the return of Tsubaki, projectile against projectile. Inoue has a shield, but probably not as fast as Robert. Chad versus Minnie, two punching beasts. May Chad use La Muerte again to defeat an enemy. Ganju versus Candace, probably the funniest of them all. Ganju's going to run away like he did against Yumichika. And she says, or they say, if that's too much to ask, I'll just be satisfied as Maki Maki goes Bankai. No, so we're going to give that the true Bleach Boys fan right there. That is a perfect comment. That is beautiful. That I'm happy with all of that. I'd be incredibly pleased to get any of that. I think it's so good. And the reasoning for each of the fights is so funny also. And also, sand can like neutralize electricity, kind of, right? Like, you know, or it makes glass.
It makes glass according to Minecraft.
It makes glass. We go into Minecraft mode.
But can you imagine? He's chasing her. He does his little sand technique at like a wall, right?
Yeah.
So she gets covered in sand, and then all the static from her electricity is going to make her hair all fucked up, which is what the only thing she cares about.
And then she can't fight anymore because she doesn't look good.
She's upset.
Mm-hmm. After this, the area begins to shake, and we see like a Giselle moment where she like falls on a little Totoro. Like,
I thought that was kind of cute. I was like,
and
oh, that's funny.
We see this giant castle begin to appear dead center. And Renji asks, like, what is that? And Shunzi's like, dude, shouldn't it be obvious? He's like, that's the enemy stronghold. And Urahara's like, dude, like, not only are they not running or hiding, but it's like they're inviting us in. And even Shunzi's like, they have some nerves, man, these guys. And we cut to this nice, beautiful red throne room. Once again, dig in the Star Wars aesthetics, the picture that we have right behind us if you're watching the video. And Yuha is sitting on his throne looking like a baddie. Okay, looking really good. Now, it is worth noting at this moment. So this is great. This is a visual representation. I will describe it for the audio people. But on this picture behind us, you can see Yuha. Now, you see his eyes right here. He's covered in eyes on his thing. And it kind of just only covers his hair. In the anime, or in the manga, it kind of covers his cloak as well.
Yeah, right?
The blackness is like all over his body. Goes all the way down his leg to the ground. Everything of the cape is part of this blackness of the Soul King as well. So it's kind of interesting that they went with maybe a little bit of a different, more subtle touch to it. So that way he still has the classic Yuha cloak. I think both are good, but it is interesting to know that it's not nearly as like spread all over the place. Maybe that will happen later.
But his throne is like crystal, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. I just think they're going to save his cloak being made out of eyes for later. So you can have a further physical demonstration of how strong he's become.
I think they're saving it for progression as well. It makes a lot of sense.
And you tell Super Saiyan from Super Saiyan 2. Super Saiyan 2's got the electricity.
So in this scene, all the royal guards are kneeling. And we once again see Uryu looking very nervous. And I'm just really interested in like what they're doing with Uryu. Because I feel like with the scenes that we saw of Uryu looking back on Ichigo, I almost feel like they're trying to show that he has almost a sense of regret for joining the Terminators. Very interesting compared to what we have in our manga story compared to this Uryu. Where if they're going for like a, hey, like Ichigo being Quincy has really fucked with Uryu's mind. And he feels bad about it. And like he's thinking of Uryu cutting the Soul King and Uryu getting shot. And now he's starting to waver on his conviction a little bit. Interesting. I don't know if that really feeds well into the final reveal where Uryu does betray them. Not betray them, but betrays the Terminators and kills Yuha. I don't know if that adds anything to that aspect. But that's kind of the vibe I'm getting off of these scenes. It's interesting.
Let Kubo cook.
Maybe he feels like he's a little bit over his head. You know, just with the sweat dripping down of just how gnarly
the
you are.
The 18th shot we got of Uryu sweating.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, God damn it. There's a puddle underneath him.
Yeah. Anybody wants to find Uryu, just follow the puddle of fucking dripping sweat.
I'm so upset we didn't get a shot of Yugum just side-eyeing him.
Yeah, we'll edit it in post.
Yugum reports that Ichigo's party and the 13 court guard squads have arrived simultaneously at this ... And Yuha goes, Velt. And Yuha chimes in that this castle has become the foundation for the new world and will one day be known as the Varvelt. And Yugram is like, very well. We will kill every last one to realize the future that is in your majestic eyes here at the foundation of the new world, the Varveld. And that's the end of the episode.
Which is cool as fuck because we're also having the Quincy music playing in the background, I think.
Well, I like to think that that name, the Varveld, Yuha like grabbed from the future because he can see all this stuff. So like in his vision that he's seeing in his eyes, he knows in the future that they eventually call this place the Varveld. So they're calling it the Varveld right now. They're like, this is the Varveld. That is what it's called. They did do some changes from the castle compared to the manga. Here, Jose, if you want to look at this, my nice comparison images. So you can see, I think
actually really nice.
They kind of took a lot more of the details out of the manga one into the anime. They didn't put as many details in the anime one.
So if you look at the manga one, there's a lower like surrounding around the castle. This one just goes straight up into big, large walls. Mm-hmm. There's about 1, 2, 3, 4 main like, what would you call them? Sections of the castle.
Cheers.
And this one has just like, you know, I guess about maybe one or two, but it's the way that it's done is completely different.
It's almost like the anime one was more classic wall, not the anime, the manga one was more classic walled in kind of Lord of the Rings setup of the castle where they have the different walls that divide all the sections. Where this one seems like it's much more open in the anime, where it's like it doesn't have the classic castle walls like all the way around. It's just like open. It's like an open form castle is what the one in the anime looks like. Yeah. So that's the end. Let's talk about the end poem, which is a Renji end poem, which is out of the blue.
I was so confused by this.
And we get the poem, "The fire that drips from fangs does not fade. The blade burns away the field, revealing my hidden friend." And we get the title for the next episode, Bleach number 33, Gate of the Sun. What do you guys think of the episode?
I liked it.
It was okay.
Not as much as I liked the other one, but I did like it.
It was, I would give this episode like a solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I agree.
It had nothing really crazy to it, but we knew that going into it, which I think is fine. We knew that it was going to be a very dialogue-heavy setup episode because it had to establish the Varveld. That's very important to the rest of the series. The Varveld, for anybody that doesn't know, is where all of the fights happen for 99% of the series remaining. It is like the place. That is a very important place that gets set up. This is where it's all going to happen. So it had to happen at one point. I'm glad it was in an exposition episode where we get going. Now, someone in my chat had a great idea, and you guys can tell me if you love or hate this, but they said that the poem read off very much like it was alluding to Renji and Baz B, because a lot of it talks about fire, and the blade burns the way the field, revealing my hidden friend, which they're saying Renji and Baz B being bros. And so they were saying, what if we get a Baz B and Renji versus somebody else fight?
I could see that happening.
I think that's really cool, but I think it is just alluding to Yugram and Baz B.
Yeah, because isn't the next couple chapters coming up all about that?
So let's talk about it. If it follows the manga, so a lot of people are expecting, because it's a Renji poem, that there's going to be Renji scenes. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not spoilers for any specific events that happen, but so that you guys know, if it does follow the manga, we immediately get the Grimmjow chasing Asken scene, which we're going to love. It's going to be fantastic.
Tom and Jerry.
And then we go straight into Yugram versus Baz B. That like immediately happens like in the manga. And they go straight into flashbacks, straight into learning about Yuha, straight all this stuff. I don't know where they would insert a Renji anything in that. We do have a moment where I don't want to spoil the other moments, but that's basically the gist of what we would see in the manga if it's adapted to the anime one for one. I don't know where they would fit a Renji anything. And also, we have Mashiro up there now, which I would bet good money Mashiro's going to get blasted by Lilibaro. I think that's going to happen. But Renji is in the opening doing something. He's got to have some scene, I'm sure. What could it be? I don't know.
It's like I'm thinking of, like, what does Renji do for the rest of the series in the manga? And it's Toshiro's brother, and they dip.
Yeah, it's a bit tough. And I had a bunch of people also like that were asking for Rukia to do her Bankai again, which I don't know if we'll ever see, because it kind of goes to Hitsugaya's time to shine. The running theories on it, and now I'll pitch this to you guys and we can see what you guys would like to see potentially. Would you guys want to see a Mayuri versus Uryu fight or a Renji versus Uryu fight? Which one would you guys want to see more?
I think Mayuri's fight is set in stone. It's been pretty good. Renji versus Uryu.
So you would give the fight to Renji.
Yeah.
Renji versus Uryu would be very interesting, but he would get destroyed.
Well, what about a Mayuri and Renji versus Uryu? Maybe they team up instead and fight against Uryu.
Let's go.
Nah, not a fan of that.
I just want Uryu to get his ass beat.
I don't think that the dynamic is there.
Well, no matter what happens, Jose, Uryu will not get his ass beat, because Uryu has to be used later on. So that just, it's just not going to happen.
But the dynamic for both those characters, where it's coming from, is obviously Renji beat Uryu. Mayuri beat Uryu.
Mayuri did not beat Uryu. Uryu blew him up.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. Mix that up. Renji beat Uryu. I thought you were disputing the Renji. Renji beat Uryu, and then Mayuri saved Renji and Uryu. So
you want him to get revenge.
Well, I think there is revenge battles on both sides of the coin, is what I'm thinking there. And I think it is a more emotionally impactful scene with the Renji versus Uryu, because they were best buds fighting inside the Pearl. You know, like, they were already,
that's
like,
true.
It's like buddies
together.
To enemies, you know, like, they had this camaraderie moment, like, they were two war buddies and now they're on the opposite side, which I think could be really cool. I feel like we already had the Mayuri versus Uryu impactful moments in the original one. I think that already happened. And now we've already had a comedic relief moment with Mayuri and Uryu. It still would be kind of interesting to see the Mayuri be, I guess, air quotes, good guy fighting against Uryu, you know, air quotes there, but I don't think it has as much as an impact as a Renji versus Uryu fight would have.
Well, I could see it if they're like all the fights with the major team, they're like teaming up to battle, and they're like, we need Uryu's out there, he's got to stop them from getting to Yuha, so he scraps with Renji for a little bit. But I think no matter what, because we got to save Uryu for later, it's just another scene of Renji taking an L. And we don't need those.
Dang.
He got his biggest dub against Master Masculine. Don't take that away from him.
But how do you have any additional scenes for Renji in the anime?
Do you think it's just going to be dialogue-based then for Renji?
Well, because Renji has funny scenes, right? Same thing with Rukia. He has Toshiro's brother. You know, that's in there. But how do you add anything in sort of an action-wise thing for Renji? And I feel like I'm so tired of hitting on the same horse. The only fight that is just like this big punching bag is just Gerard. It's just Gerard over and over again.
Unless he's included in that, but even then it wouldn't be too much.
But that's so boring. That's so boring. All the other fights are like already settled and have this emotional impact to it, and those are locked in. The only one that you can really throw as many people as you want into it is Gerard.
Unless we go back to that Instagram comment, they're like, all right, we need Reyes, we need Candace, we need Robert.
They gotta bring. I feel like that's one of the mistakes that maybe happened in Thousand Year Blood War, is they killed off all the other Stern Raiders so quickly, so quickly. And then the ones that survived, that we know survived, they are on the good side. They want to go after Yuha as well. So it's crazy. Because obviously the Royal Guard is the most powerful. They have all the powers now. They're awesome. They're cool. But then that only leaves five people. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
There's just not a lot of space, but that's why I'm very interested to see what Kubo is cooking up with a lot of the stuff, because there's a lot of anime-only scenes that have been added so far. There's a lot of slight changes that could come back into play later in the series, so I'm interested to see if he cashes in on some of that. I'm interested to see if he really like slam dunks some of that little hidden stuff and throws it back. It would be cool. I do think there was a club outside question that was asked very recently, and this could really rule out Robert returning. Sorry, Robert Bros. I know it's going to be heartbreaking. Somebody asked about the Ashwellen and why the younger Stern Raiders were able to survive, where a lot of the older ones seemed like they died first. Mm-hmm. And Kubo confirmed that the way the Ashwellen works is it did go basically from the most senior officers down. And that's why somebody like Robert got incinerated, basically, the Indiana Jones death again. And that's why the younger people, like Lil Toto and Bazby, they lost a portion of their powers, but they didn't lose all of them because they're still of use. They were younger. They were still good to go.
That makes sense.
That just makes me hate Yuha more.
Which is very interesting as well when you think about it. Okay, let's apply this to Uryu's mom dying. And let's apply this to
Ichigo's
Misaki
mom.
And why she was able to continue on after the Ashwellen. But meanwhile, Uryu's mom died, right? Like, Uryu's mom was donezo. Where Misaki was much younger, good to go. And wasn't Uryu's mom sick? Am I misremembering that?
She was sick. And Misaki got attacked by Grant Fisher. So, like,
yeah. So Uryu's mom was sick, so she died to the Ashwellen because she was already weak. It said that the weak ones and the old ones, they were first to die. And then Misaki didn't die to it, but she just wasn't as powerful now because she lost her powers, and that's why she died to Grand
Fisher.
She
was left open.
Mm-hmm. Which applies perfectly to that as well. Yeah. So that was a great answer by Kubo. Now, that was somebody else's again. They were like, hey, does the Ashwellen work like this? And Kubo was like, yes, sir, you are correct. Like, classic Club Outside question. People need to stop asking Club Outside questions that have an answer in the questions.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be the question. Stop. Hard stop. Don't give him an answer to the question. Just ask the question.
Sam, you yourself have said don't ask Kubo a question unless you already have an answer, because those are the only ones he picks.
Well, now I'm saying it needs to be reversed. Kubo's getting too many softballs. There needs to be.
What would you ask Kubo
One of the greatest. It was a good piece of advice that was given to me by my dad. is when you're asking somebody for something now, it's this is a total asshole move. Just be warned. You do not want to do this. People will think you're the biggest piece of shit in the fucking world. But when you ask somebody something, you know, like let's say an example, Jose, you flaked on me. Okay. This isn't a real story. Jose flaked on me, didn't show up. And I go, Jose, like, why did you flake on me? Were you sick? Or like, what's going on? I gave you the out, right? And now you can be like, oh yeah, I was sick or I had something else going on. Instead, you want to go, Jose, why'd you flake on me? And then just leave it at that. Now, you can apply that to business. You can apply that to asking anything. You will come off as a fucking asshole, though, because it is super mean and blunt. Like, it is like you don't give an answer, and then you just sit there and you wait. And you just don't say anything. That's what needs to be done to Kubo, okay? That has to be done to Kubo. Don't give him an answer. If we all come together and we band together on that, he has to answer them. He has to. He can't.
There's no
escape. We stonewall him.
What would you ask him?
Your heart's desire, Sam. You're given a free pass. You're sitting in front of Kubo.
I'm sitting in front of Kubo. He goes, Sam, ask me one question and the answer is yours. I'm trying to think of like in One Piece terms, like, you know, the question is like, hey, what's the One Piece? Like, that's the question. Like, what is the question that I can ask in Bleach terminology that I could hold over everybody? I want to use it for notorious or nefarious reasons.
I don't know. Aizen.
I don't want to know anything about Aizen, Jose. I have no interest. I know. I don't want to know anything about him.
Sam, I have the question for you. Just let me know when you need to tag in.
I'm thinking I future-proof my question.
What's
there is
like?
There is a rumor that there is a Burn the Witch core that potentially Urahara could be the leader of.
Ooh.
I would ask about that. And I would ask maybe a Burn the Witch related question that relates back to Bleach, and I would go from there.
What's the timeline in?
We don't know. We don't know.
We don't know what the timeline
is. I don't think we were we given any hard dates on Burn the Witch, Pythies? Can you remember anything?
I feel like it took place like I don't know, like a couple years after the final chapter of Bleach. I think it was two or three, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head either, but I think we weren't given an exact one, so we don't really know.
I mean, it would be fun if you say, like, would the girls from Burn the Witch ever meet up with Ichigo as a crossover?
Nah, that's boring. I don't want to know, like, I don't know. I'd rather
you want to know, like,
I want to know, like, a world-breaking hard fact of Bleach that I could really ask, and then I can then lord it over everybody else that I
that's know. What I know that you don't. Yeah.
That I know the answer.
I thought you'd ask, like, how did Kukaku lose her arm?
I mean, that's probably, like, I would probably ask that, oh, firework accident, and then that'd be it. And I'd be like,
you'd be upset.
I picture Kubo as, like, a genie, one of those malicious genies that you ask them, like, for a wish, and they will twist your words to give you the most boring answer possible. So you gotta, like, really lay it out.
So, like, Sam, you could, like, wish to fly so he would turn you into a fly.
Yes. Yeah, he'd be like, that is what Kubo would do. You know, it has to be something very specific that I want a singular answer for, and then he would hook me up.
Okay, so what's the most absurd thing you could ask? Okay, Jose, you and I, we need to get on this too. I mean, would like relationship statuses count?
Could.
I mean, people go crazy over Ichigo Rukia.
I mean, here's one that you could, I think, would seal the deal on a lot of stuff. You could just straight up ask him, is Camp Fear World canon?
True.
And see what the answer he gives off of that.
I like that a lot.
Does hardcore pressure him? You know, like
he's
like, hey, I'll tell you anything you want to know. Okay, tell me this. Camping your world is a cannon. And then just stare at him in the eyes.
just
stare at him like it's a lie detector test. I would even throw in, if I can hit him two at the same time, is Camp Fear World and Spirits Are Forever With You canon? And then just stare at him in the eyes. Because a lot of people want Azashiro. So I have not read it. So the potential spoilers for Spirits Are Forever With You. I guess one of the things that is written in that book that is how Aizen got released from some of his restraints. You know how we saw him tied up mm-hmm. to like the cross and then he was able to walk out towards Shunsui? Pythies, have you read the book?
I forget the name of the Bankai, but it's Azashiro's.
Azashiro, his Bankai allows him basically like interact with it, all of the Soul Society, the Reishi, whatever the fuck. He was the one who unstrapped Aizen and allowed him to walk in Spirits Are Forever With You. That is one of the things that is in that book. So a lot of people, when I was watching that scene, they were like, oh, this confirms Azashiro. I was like, no, it doesn't. It doesn't confirm anything. Like, there's no hard confirmation.
Really cool.
And I was talking about this. I love, now this is going to be sacrilege. Pythies, maybe cover your ears. Take your headphones off for a second.
Okay.
I love Tokunaga. Love Tokunaga, okay? I really badly want Tokunaga to be canon. And I would just die inside if, like, at the end of the season or maybe, like, the end of the whole show, they make a throwaway comment. Like, they're cleaning up Soul Society. And they're like, it's so weird. A lot of the Story Breakers are missing their Zanpakuto. I'd be like, ooh, I'd be so happy. And just like a throwaway comment, just like something to confirm that Camp Fear World is like canon.
I wonder what's happening.
Yeah. Or like,
Like, here's what's happening. There's a conversation happening on screen, let's say between Mayor and Kenpachi. It could be two fucking characters. And two Solarbears come running by, like, they're running out of the field. And, like, we can't find Grimmy's brain. I'm like, oh! Like, oh, I'd be so happy.
Oh. Grimmy's brain missing. And then we get the Espadas up at the top. We get that whole interaction that we get really early on.
That's asking for too much, Jose. I need that. I'm asking for, like, breadcrumbs to be thrown at me.
You just want like a little pigeon, bit of sprinkle.
Like, I just want, like, some breadcrumbs thrown at me.
The Legend of Ikumiko Domoe.
Yes.
So not breadcrumbs. I was thinking about this the other day while I was in the shower, because, you know, you have the weirdest thoughts in the shower.
Shower thoughts.
Mm-hmm. So you know how people were, they're like, oh, the stuff Kubo was adding changes the whole cosmology of how, like, the Bleach world works?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would love if that also still makes Can't Feel your own world canon, because I would love that everything that Tokinata based his entire existence on was just a lie.
Yeah. And it fuck works, that bitch. It still works very well with Tokinata, because a lot of the stuff that he bases his existence on in this story that he knows of how the world was formed, in the book, he says, I heard a rumor that this might be. And even when Ichibei is explaining it, he's like, the rumor goes that this is this. So it's perfect. It's really, really good. I like that a lot. A lot of people were saying they hope Shuhei uses his Bankai later on in the series.
No, I don't think he'll do it.
I like Shuhei's Bankai. I love the way that it was used in Can't Fear and World. If you're a Shuhei fan, go read Can't Fear and World. I promise it will pay off so good.
He's already cool.
That's a great novel for his character. And you shouldn't want, as a Shuhei fan, you should not want them to take stuff from Camp Framer World, because they should adapt that. That is a great story for Shuhei. It's a great moment for him in front of all the other captains where he gets his Bankai. It is a fantastic payoff. The same thing with Shinji. If I was a Shinji fan, I would be mad that he did not get the moment to shine that he did in Camp Framer World, because that moment is so much better.
It's so much cooler.
It's so much cooler. His Bankai is so much stronger in the novel as well, which happens with all the characters. All the novel characters are so fucking broken for some reason.
Three-piece combo.
But it's a great time, and I don't want them to keep cherry picking the best moments from that novel to put into the anime, because at this point I'm like 50-50 on if they're ever going to adapt Camp Fear World, because I think the fact that they already took Shinji's Bankai out of it's not a big loss, but it was a big part to the novel at a certain point.
It was a cliffhanger for book two.
Yeah, I think if they take Shuhei's Bankai out, we're not getting Camp Fear World. It'll never happen. I think if that gets shown in the anime, it's done. The dreams of Camp Fear World is over. I think that story is really well written, and it plays great respect to a lot of the characters. I just want them to adapt it, so I don't want them to steal stuff from there. I'm done.
We will find out next episode if Camp Fear World is going to be adapted or not, because we're going to get a lot of scenes with Little Toto, and if she's there, and if she has that flashback to talking with Grimmy, then that confirms we're not getting Can't Fear Your Own World, because that was a big part of it. One of my favorite scenes from Can't Fear Your Own World, by the way.
We'll have to wait and see.
What did she ask for, a piece of a cookie or a cake?
She walks up to the scariest Quincy ever to be, Grimmy, and just goes, hey, I'm hungry, make me donuts. I love that scene. That was when I was like, okay, I went from Lil Toto was trash to I love this character.
Jose, did you think of a question you'd ask Kubo?
Nope.
I did.
Because once you guys said that Can't Fear Your Own World, my brain started spiraling at that point. I was like, wow, just everything in there went so well.
Mm-hmm. Pythes, you said you thought of a question?
Yeah, but hold on. I'm going to answer for Jose. Jose, you're going to ask Kubo how much of old Nemu's memories are going to be added to new Nemu.
I don't want that.
Okay, that's good. That's a good question.
Just let her be just the new person. It's like when your wife passes on, and you know eventually you go through your mourning stages, and you pick your next one, you know, number two on the list.
It's kind of fucked up, Jose.
I know. Yeah. I just like fuck. I don't want a child.
Damn. This is some deep Jose mental lore coming out.
Specifically, Nemu child. Unless we made that child.
Good recovery. Good recovery, Jose. Good recovery.
So it was mentioned by Kubo at some point that Isane had romantic feelings toward Unohana. So I wanted to know, did she reciprocate? Were they a thing? Is it canon, Kubo, or not?
Pythes, I have to apologize to you, Pythes. I just have this image of you in my head that you're just such a fucking degenerate, and I have to apologize because I just, like, I heard that first fucking thing. It's like, oh, it was said that Isane and Retsu, Isane had romantic feelings for Retsu. In my head, I mean, like, I'm going to have to cut the next thing that comes out of fucking Pythes' mouth, because I know it's just going to be the most fucking deplorable thing that's going to come. I thought the thing that's going to come out of your mouth is, did they scissor? I thought that was going to be the question. I was like, did she reciprocate? I'm like, I don't know where I have this image of Pythes being the most fucking degenerate human being that I know, but I'm sorry.
Exclusively, Everybody needs to know it exclusively because of the shit I like on Twitter.
yeah. My fucking bad, dog. Maybe that's it. I don't know, but my fucking bad.
I am like 75% completely normal wholesome, but then the rest of it is just like this garbage on Twitter. Like this on retweet that.
Any last comments that you guys want to make on the episode before we hop over to the captain's meeting episode of Bleach Boys?
I was gonna say something, but I feel like Kubo did answer it. It's just like the Vizards, can they go resurrection?
I think that was a Club Outside question that was asked recently.
I feel like it was.
I think Kubo said they are able to, but like they can't. Like none of them have done it, but they could do it if they trained.
Oh, okay, so it's kind of like when he answered that Grimmjow could go Segunda Etapa?
Yeah, he could. He just hasn't yet because he hasn't unlocked that shit. There is another character you forgot. Do you remember that girl you saw in the lab that had chains in her hair?
Yes.
Yeah, the one who falls?
Yeah, that's Mashiro's sister.
Okay.
Cool. Her name is Nico.
I guess the Renji fan was there as well, by the way. The one that has the...
the dude with the brow?
Yeah.
Rikichi, my boy.
He was there as well. He was not part of the scanning shot where he saw everybody at the front of it, but he was part... There was a time that we saw the back of all the people on the ground, and it was like Maki Maki, and then he was one of them
One of the orb holders.
Good.
Yeah.
I like it. It feels so much more impactful. That's the one thing I will say about this episode is that this and the last one really made the gates seem like such a big deal. Like, it's way harder to do. Because it was nothing in the manga.
My favorite scene added so far to the anime as a whole is the Shunsui speech scene. I love that they brought all the old Soul Reapers back, and now it is a much larger group effort. I love it.
Like, what happened in the lab? Vizard show up, Sternritter show up. We made a gate. That was it. This is a whole ordeal. I will say they did unintentionally make me laugh when Shunsui is about to, you know, the gate is made, he's about to make his speech, and the little handles on the doors were behind his hat. They look like Mickey Mouse ears. That was like, they should have changed the angle just a little bit. Great episode. Not amazing, but like, it is... Last episode was wanted. This episode was needed because the next six episodes are going to go crazy. By the way, just for lore reasons, we've discussed Sam's Bankai. I have decided his Shikai is just a hand grenade.
Now, I'm not on board with the hand grenade. I feel like that's not representative to anything. But I feel like the hand grenade just goes hand in hand with
love for Kukaku.
Oh, okay. All right. You're swaying me now, Jose. You son of a bitch.
Jose, that is much more thought than I put into it because I was thinking, like, what's one thing Sam hates? A fair fight. Okay, so like you draw your swords, you stance up, you take your battle stance, Sam just immediately throws a grenade in their face.
No, Pythes. Okay, so in the deep Sam lore and our friendship lore, we played D&D and Sam's character would always carry pocket sand. Shikai is sand.
Shikai is pocket sand.
Yeah.
No. Great. No, he has the grenade, but he can carry the sand because he learned the technique from Kukaku.
Listen, you guys aren't being creative enough. Here's how the sword works. Very similar to Gin's sword, where they kind of, you can crack open and there's like this little hidden compartment with poison, but it's just fucking sand. So when we lock swords and like a stalemate, it blows sand into your fucking eyes.
I love that. Yeah.
It's kind of like the Joker with a little flower on his chest. It just shoots sand at you. It's like not even poison. It just shoots sand.
Why does your sword look like it's got cracks and holes on it? Yeah. You'll find out.
Yeah. Every time I hit you, sand is just fucking exploding.
He has to put it up to his mouth and go,
yeah. I blow through the cracks.
You know what? It's kind of like Ishin when he does the Engetsu.
But sand.
But sand.
The stupidest Bankai ever, dude. Or like the Shikai, the stupidest one.
Okay, so to make the pocket sand joke even better, it's not a normal size sword. He just has a pocket knife.
Well, then I'm stealing too much from Kensei at that point. You know?
Kensei's going to get jealous.
Yeah,
I've been expanding on the Sam Bankai lore, and I've decided it's not just mustard gas. Sam has an access to the entire Geneva Convention in which he can look.
Stop!
He can look and see what war crime would be the best to win at this moment. So, like, Ukitake is a really nice guy, right? So Sam goes, come along, my child soldiers.
Hey, I mean, honestly, aside from the child soldier part, great Bankai. Great Bankai. I'm totally on board. The Geneva Breaker. It's great.
It's called the Geneva Suggestion.
Great. God. Really good. Let's wrap there. Thank you to our Weebs Guild captain level members, which is PV. We appreciate your support as always. If you guys want to get your name read out live or have it appear on the screen like so, join our Patreon. We're going to head into the Bleach Boys captain's meeting. If you guys don't know, we do it an extra 15 minutes of the Bleach Boys exclusively for our Patreon members. We appreciate any of the support you guys can give us, whether that be likes, following, subscribing. All of that helps us out greatly. If you guys want to check us out live, we do a live manga reading every Friday. And then Saturday, we have a live watch of the episode that we all do together, which is very, very cool. A lot of people have been asking for a rewatch of the first movie now that that has become relevant again. So maybe that's something that we can work on as well. With that, you guys, if you want to join our Discord, the link in the description is down below. We've been having a lot of new people join the Discord. It's a really great time. I cannot recommend enough that you guys come on in and we can talk some Bleach in the Discord.
Sam gets bullied.
Okay. That's unnecessary.
All the time.
That's unnecessary. All right.
Not by
me. It's a love-hate thing, guys. It's like it's a love-hate thing.
I don't bully with him. That, I'm nice to him.
Okay. All right. All right. We will see you guys next Sunday for a new episode of Bleach Boys. Let us know what you guys thought in the comments. And then let us know if you could ask Kubo any one question that you're guaranteed an answer. What would you ask Kubo? All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles. Discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.